The following program has been brought to you by Cain Vineyard and Winery. Cain Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cain5.com.
Good morning. This is Bernie Wides on the air again with the Naturally Show. And if you're wondering about that beautiful music, it was called Country Gardens by Percy Grainger. For those of you out in the audience of a certain age who had music appreciation in school, that was one of the pieces we had to remember. So my partner today is Janet David. She's the co-host. And Janet, want to say hi to everybody this morning?
Hi. It's nice to be here.
Okay. And my special guest today is Melissa Metrick. Melissa, say hi to everybody.
Hello.
Okay. Let me ask you about your name first, Melissa. Your last name, Metrick.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us the background of it or what?
Well, it's actually, my grandparents are Russian.
Okay.
It's like from, I think it was originally Dimitrik maybe, and then they shortened it when they came over. Okay. So now it's just Metrick.
So, you know, when I first saw your name, Metrick, I wondered if you had changed it from English to Metrick. Like the measuring system, no?
No.
You didn't do that. No. Okay. So, Melissa is the gardener for Roberta's, and we're going to talk about Roberta's garden. We were just up there this morning before the show started, and Melissa was harvesting food for using in the restaurant. So tell us what you harvested today, Melissa, and will it be used today in the restaurant? Is that how it works? Or what?
I'm not sure if it's going to be used for sure today, but it'll probably be used this week for sure. We harvested sugar snap peas, which we use for a drink at the bar.
Okay, right.
We harvested arugula, which the back kitchen uses for all of their, or for certain entrees. We also harvested our first sun gold cherry tomatoes. So
oh,
that's
yes.
really
we saw
exciting.
Those little beautiful tomatoes,
yep.
Right.
And we also harvested some cauliflower that will also be used in the kitchen for certain dishes, mm-hmm. probably this week for dinner or something
good.
Like that.
Okay, so tell me about your background. How did you become a gardener of this? It's a pretty a huge garden,
yeah.
There, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty big. First I used to garden with my grandfather when I was really little, and I learned some basic stuff that way. But I moved out to California after I graduated college, and I joined AmeriCorps, and through that I was part of this program. It was actually at a middle school called Willard Middle School, and we had the Willard Greening Project, which was teaching the kids about nutrition, teaching them how to grow food, and then also cooking with them. So it was just showing kids showing middle school children everything about food, which I just think was amazing.
So was it a successful program?
Yeah.
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 Okay, so did the kids use the food to make lunches or anything like that? Or took it home, the food?
No, well, we would use it in the cooking classes.
Oh,
and
oh
then,
yeah, cooking classes too.
Yeah,
oh,
and then we would also do all the events for the school. So we would do the food for the events mm-hmm. that they would have at the school. But yeah, a lot of it was just, you know, teaching the kids about nutrition and also getting them out of the classroom. And it was part of their science grade. So
oh, that's
it was
good.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, it was really wonderful.
Terrific. Just to say one word or two about AmeriCorps, because a lot of people don't know what it is. Is it still in existence?
There's some question about that. I should keep up on it. I'm actually not sure. I did this in 2005, so I did this about 6 years ago, but I'm not sure how they're doing on funding. I think my original, what I was the kind of faction I was a part of may not exist anymore, mm-hmm. which is very sad because the gardener that I worked for, Matt Sang, he, like, you know, using the volunteers, they would help out a lot. So, and that, and also in like a lot of school programs. So it's very sad if it's not existing anymore.
Yeah,
so.
But I, you know, now there are many programs like that.
Yeah.
I know in the New York City schools.
Yeah.
I pass an elementary school every day, and they have a little garden.
Yeah.
And it's very nice, and I'm sure the kids get to at least taste the food, take home
and
try it out, right?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, there's still people teaching, actually just teaching gardening now.
Yeah.
Which I think is wonderful. I mean, I walk around and I see gardens everywhere in schools.
Yes, they've really sprouted up, you might say.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Can't resist that. Okay, so what about fertilizers and pesticides and things like that for this garden here?
I don't use any pesticides. It's I grow organically. I use my own kind of, it's an organic fertilizer, so it's kind of my own, like, 10-10-10 mix.
Your own mix. So you mix it up yourself?
Yeah. And it's I mean, none of it is with chemicals. It's like rock phosphate and green sand and bat guano and stuff like that. It's not, it's all derived from natural resources. So
you can get bat guano? You don't collect your own, do you?
Bat guano? No. I'm wondering where I'd collect that. No.
Yeah, years ago, guano was a big industry in South America, and those islands were all those birds' nests, right?
Yeah.
So today they still do it, I guess.
Yeah, they still do it.
Yeah, so it's very rich stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you could use it for nitrogen, or I think you could also use it for phosphorus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how much food can you, food from the garden, can Roberta's use? Can you produce enough for them, or they have to buy from other
places? They definitely have to buy from other places. Most of the stuff that they get, like the other places that they get it from, are a lot of times farmers markets, or I think sometimes they get some things from California, but I would say, I mean, I'm trying to produce as much as possible. Right now we're saying like maybe 5-10%.
That's it. Right.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see, because I'm kind of writing down all the numbers this year. So it's kind of like an experiment just to see how much they've had to order. Like, we still haven't really figured it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may be more than that, because I feel like with our baby greens, what we did this spring, we actually produced a lot. Like in 1 month, we produced 53 pounds.
Well, that's terrific. And baby greens are nice. They're nice and small. They don't take up a lot of room, and they grow fast.
Yes.
Right?
And you could harvest them multiple times.
Yeah. Well, so, Janet remembers we once took a trip with my daughter, Erica. You know, she has a program on called Why We Cook. And she was out visiting a farm in Ohio called the Chef's Garden, mm-hmm. where they grow all these micro greens and stuff. Have you ever heard of them?
Microgreens, I was going to do microgreens here, but then we decided just to go with baby greens.
And they had a great setup. The restaurant would look online. They would put online what they have ready to go.
Yeah.
And they could send it in, and by the next morning, they air freighted it to them. Of course, they were expensive greens and everything.
Yeah.
But these are all, you know, top-grade restaurants, so they could they could afford to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think you're going to expand the garden here? It seems so successful.
I may. I mean, I may expand it in the sense of putting in more planters, or kind of like changing the whole design of it. So, we would definitely like to expand, or even just looking into other ways of growing stuff so that we could really kind of grow as much as possible. I mean, that's what we're doing now, but we'll see how far we could push the envelope.
So folks, if you want to see Melissa's garden and Roberta's garden, which are the same, I took some photos, and we'll put it up on the show. And after you listen to the show, go to the photo gallery, and you'll see the photos that we took this morning of Melissa with some of the stuff she's harvested. And I'll just describe to you. You know, our broadcasting studio is in a shipping crate that they used to use to load bulk cargo onto ships. And they're still doing it. So we have two shipping crates here put together, and the interior size is probably 16 feet long by 8 by 8. And on top of this steel structure is the garden. So it's a rooftop greenhouse, right?
Yeah, we have two. It's actually a hoop house. So we have two hoop houses.
Okay, what's a hoop house?
It's to extend the seasons. It's kind of like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
But it's made with like hoops.
Oh, like PVC hoops. Like the old covered wagon hoops.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, except it's PVC pipes.
Okay, well, you're up to date.
But yeah, we have two of those just to help extend our seasons. And then we have a bunch of containers in the backyard.
In the backyard. So, well, I have to say, Roberta's has a very big backyard. It's terrific. You have room there. I don't know. Maybe it's about an acre, you think? Half an acre? It's pretty big space.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to ask you about some of the specific greens that you're using. There was a nice article in Time Out about the garden and you. And they mentioned some stuff that I really am not familiar with. Some greens, let's see, a bit of dandelion greens.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, the Italian dandelion.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you buy seeds for that specifically? Or?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't let them go to flower? Is that, you just pick the greens?
Yeah, we just use them as baby greens.
Yeah, because when they get older, I think they get tough and they get more bitter.
Yep. Right. Definitely. I mean, they're actually still pretty bitter when they're babies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's very nutritious for you. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a nice bitter note in the salad.
Yeah.
With all the sweet dressings and stuff, right? Okay, so that was the dandelion greens. And let's see. Here's something that I don't know. Salty botarga. Oh. What's that?
Oh, that's not...
it's not a green, is it?
Yeah, that's not a green.
Is it like a sausage or something? Or
Actually not sure what that is. That may be a cheese, but I'm not sure.
Oh, maybe, right.
Or, a cheese or a meat. Yeah, I'm not...
Okay. Dill I know about. You're growing dill. And let's see, what else? There's another one here that I didn't really know. Beehives. Oh, yeah. Well, about the honey.
Mm-hmm.
I know there were some hives here. Brandon had a hive, and my daughter Erica had a hive.
Yeah.
And she had to move hers because getting up there became more difficult. It was on an adjacent roof. So did you actually use some of the Brandon's honey and harvest it?
Well, I didn't harvest the honey myself. Yeah. Brandon takes care of the bees.
Right.
But I know that the restaurant definitely used some of the honey.
Right.
And we had six hives, and we now have two because we lost four over the winter. It was a really hard winter, but we might get some better queens. So
okay, we have 2 minutes left. I'm going to ask you about one more thing that you're growing. Saltwort.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I know saltwort grows in the salt marsh, right?
Yeah.
And it's called sea pickle.
Yeah.
That's the common name for it.
Yeah.
So how are you growing it here? You have a separate saltwater?
Well, it's funny. We actually just started growing it. Yeah. It's kind of an experiment. We're growing it in a fish tank.
Oh, great.
So it's kind of like a little terrarium. Like, we're going to see how it... And we're just growing it with regular... Like fresh water.
Right.
We haven't experimented with salt water. But we actually got the seeds from, I think it was like from Johnny Seeds. So
really?
Yeah. And they said you don't have to use salt water. And so we're just kind of experimenting with it and seeing how it is.
Yeah, because that's an interesting plant because it'll grow in very high saline water.
Yeah.
You know, so you're doing the opposite. You're going to try it in fresh water. Or maybe
and see what happens.
Because it's really delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to pick it in the wild just to taste it.
Yeah.
And it tastes like pickles. It's really nice.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if that taste is going to kind of translate with fresh water. Probably the salt has something to do with it. But, I mean, that's the great thing about doing this garden. It's just talking to the chef, mainly Carlo, and seeing what he would like to work with, and it's experimenting.
That's terrific.
A big experiment. So it
sounds
great.
Like a great setup.
Yeah.
So you and Carlo are a good team.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
Terrific. Okay. So is there anything you'd like to add about the garden or anything So what do you see in the future? You're gonna keep gardening and get bigger and better gardens or what?
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna keep gardening. I've actually also learned a little bit about farming and gardening from Annie Novak, who runs Eagle Street Farm.
Okay. And tell people about that farm. Where is it? Where is Eagle Street?
It's on Eagle Street in Greenpoint. Yeah, and it's on a rooftop.
Okay, is it a big farm?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
What about that other one in Long Island City?
Yeah, there's also the Grange.
That's the Grange, right?
Which Ben Flanner runs, yeah. Yeah, and that is pretty big.
I think that's really big. About an acre on that roof.
Yeah, it may be it might even be a little bit more than an acre. Yeah. But and Roberta's actually helped kind of start that up in
get
a way.
Get that going.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Brandon told me about it.
Yeah, they were working on it a lot last year.
Right.
Yeah, and now I think they're producing a lot, which is great.
So it's a commercial operation. It's actually a farm.
And
And they grow and they sell all their stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how much of it, like, because I know that they have a lot of volunteers, and I know they probably do a lot of community work. So
right.
As well.
Okay, so it was good to meet you and talk to you.
Yeah,
and
it was very nice.
Sounds like you have a lot of good enthusiasm for this.
Yes, definitely.
And keep everything sprouting and keep Roberta's green, right?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks,
okay.
Melissa.
Thanks
and
for having me.
We'll see you a little later on for lunch. Okay.
All right,
okay?
Thanks.
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bernie Wides and Janet. Janet, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Janet David.
And Janet David, back on the air, and Janet's my co-host today. Carol's busy working on her latest book on bedbugs. And so she's hard at work on it. Also, she's moving to a new apartment. So I asked my partner, Janet, my partner and lover, Janet David, to be with me today because Janet is a gardener also. So, and Janet gardens in a special place. So, Janet, will you tell everybody about your gardening experience? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you had a garden on Fire Island years ago. And
Well, as Bernie said, I had a garden on Fire Island, and when I sold that house, I missed gardening. I live in the middle of Manhattan. So I went to the Central Park website, and I found a site that said, Get Dirty, and I thought, oh, that sounds great. So I was assigned to a zone. Central Park is divided into zones, and the gardeners, each zone has its own gardener and a set of volunteers. I was assigned to Copcot. I had asked for that area because it's close to where I live, and I had no idea what Copcot was, and a lot of people working in the park didn't even know what Copcot
is.
Right,
it's sort of a mystery.
Yeah, but I'm going to clear the mystery up.
Oh, good.
Right now, okay? So Copcot literally means this little house on the crest of the hill. It's actually Central Park's largest wooden rustic structure. It's also sometimes called a summer house. And it was built in 1985. It's a replica of one that was built in the 1860s.
This replaced the old one.
Yeah. This is also, that area section is also known because they have yucca plants there, which is it's a rare desert plant, and it's actually growing in Central Park.
Right. So Copcot is it's a wooden structure, it's like a gazebo, right, John?
It's like a gazebo.
Like
That's
a gazebo.
What most people call it, but the official name is Copcot.
Okay, so folks, there are pictures on the in the photo gallery. So take a look at the pictures later, and you'll see a picture of Janet standing in Cupcut. And tell us about how it works with the professional gardener.
Okay.
And who's your professional gardener and your team?
Okay, so George is our professional gardener. He's our leader. He makes sure that we do everything right. My shift is just Wednesday 9 to 12, and there are now three other gardeners with me, three other volunteers. For a long time, I was the only one working with George, and occasionally there'd be some other people, but they didn't seem to last too long. But I've been sticking it out for 11 years. So what we do is we meet George at a designated area, and he tells us what we're going to be doing that day. Mostly, to be perfectly honest, it's a lot of weeding, a lot of scut work, down on your hands and knees. Sometimes it's muddy.
And you do come home dirty, Jen.
I do come home really dirty, but I come home. And so we do basically what George needs to be done. And right now there are three women and one man on our particular volunteer team in Cupcut.
Yeah, just give us the first names of the team.
Okay, I'm going to say hi to Muriel, Annette, and Mike.
And Mike, right. And George is the leader of the gang.
George is our leader.
Right, and I put a great photo up of George and the volunteer gang in the park. Okay.
I should say, if you want to know more about Central Park, you can go to the website, www.centralparknyc.org, and see maps of the park, including Cupcut. If you put in Cupcut, you'll see that. And get all kinds of information about Central Park if you're living in New York or if you're planning to visit.
Right. So Central Park is a great resource. And Janet, how many, what's it, 11 years already, Janet?
I've been there about 11 years,
yeah.
Maybe more.
So you're sort of a senior volunteer.
Senior volunteer,
right.
I've gotten pins and badges and all kinds of stuff.
You've gotten recognized.
Recognized, right.
Right. Okay. And folks, if you're ever in the park and you're in that area, Cupcut area, and you see this good-looking black guy, George, go over and say hello. Tell him you heard about him on Heritage Radio Network, and he'll be glad to talk to you because he's a great conversationalist.
I'll just say, Cupcut is located at the southernmost end of Central Park, just alongside 59th Street and 6th Avenue. There are two statues there, one of Simón Bolívar, and one of somebody else who I can't remember right now. But it's at the southern end of the park near 6th Avenue.
Yeah. Okay, so I know, Janet, you have a little sub-garden there of your own. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very interesting story. So you want to tell us about your little pollinator garden that you have?
Yes. There was a joint venture between the American Museum of Natural History, where I also volunteer, and Central Park to do a census of bees. This was just around the time of the colony collapse disorder, and people wanted to know a little bit more what was going on with bees. And at the initial meeting, they gave us seven what they called study plants that are supposed to attract bees. And we had to plant them. So I took the plants home, and then I thought, I have no place to plant them. I have an enclosed terrace.
Right. No pollinators in our terrace.
Right. No bees are going to get through that terrace. So I spoke to George, and to make a long story short, I went through many, many bureaucratic levels, and I was able to take a little piece of Cupcut and plant my seven pollinator plants so that I could then do a study of how many bees were landing on them at designated time periods. And over the years, right, what I'm left with right now, I'm left with two of the hardy plants. One is milkweed and the other is mountain mint, which is a very pretty low bush. The others kind of came and went. They were not as hardy. But the milkweed is great because it now attracts monarch butterflies. It's a pretty plant, even though it's a weed, and a lot of people don't like it for that reason. I think it's a nice-looking plant. And it does attract monarch butterflies. And we've actually seen eggs and pupa caterpillars on the leaves of the milkweed plant.
Right. When we were in the park the other day, there was actually a female monarch butterfly.
Right.
That I think she was looking for a place to lay her eggs.
Yeah, it looked
on the
like
milkweed.
That.
Yeah.
She was flitting around.
And she was nectaring. That's when the
nectaring. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell people what nectaring is.
Nectaring means taking the nectar out of the flower of the plant. That's what they need to sustain themselves. That's the main diet of most butterflies.
And bees too.
No, the bees also.
And the bees take the pollen also to use to make honey.
Right. And the proboscis of each butterfly or bee is designed, so to speak, to fit into particular plants. So some bees and butterflies have long proboscis for flowers that are very, very deep, and some have shorter, wider proboscis for plants that are not quite as deep.
Right. So Janet has a sub-garden in Copcut. Now, when we talk about Copcut, it doesn't only pertain to the wooden structure. It's the whole area around it that George has responsibility for.
Right. Right? The area around is named Copcut for
the structure.
For the structure. So we garden, I would say it's about 2 square blocks that we're responsible for.
Probably. Maybe an acre altogether. Mm-hmm. But it's up and down, so it's hard to measure it. It's a rolling hill there.
And rocky.
And the bedrock comes out there. So it would be hard to measure. Okay, so that's another example of gardening. So I know a lot of people who listen to the network like gardening. And I have to tell you that you don't need a lot of area to have a garden. You can have a tiny little garden and still be successful and still have enjoyment from it. So one other thing about pollinators. Because Janet spoke about her garden as a pollinator garden because it attracts bees and
butterflies
and hummingbirds when they pass through also, and wasps and other critters that depend on flowers, okay? And they do a service to farmers and to us by pollinating the crops, right? Especially the fruit crops are having trouble because of the bees are in trouble.
Right. With colony collapse disorder, a lot of fruit trees weren't being pollinated, and that was devastating to that industry.
Right. So they had, well, you know what there are. There are commercial bee growers who travel around the country with their hives and release the bees to the orchards and other places to pollinate the plants. So they've been having problems too. Okay, so if you're interested in vertebrates like bees and even horseshoe crabs are invertebrates also. There's an organization called the Xerces Society, which purposes the conservation of invertebrates. So if you want to get more information on any invertebrate, from bees to wasps to beetles or the dragonflies or anything like that, go online and go to the Xerces Society. I'll have to spell it for you. It's X E-R-C-E-S. And I think it's pronounced Xerces, right, John?
Xerces. Mm-hmm.
Janet's my expert in English. She was an English major. Xerces Society. And they put out a very nice magazine, and I think it comes out every 2 months. So if you want more information about that, and I think Liz Johnson is still working on this project. She's from the Society for Conservation at the Museum of Natural History.
Yes, I think she
is. Yeah, I ran into her the other day. She says she's going to have more stuff to do, so maybe you'll get involved in that again. Okay, so how much time do we have left, Jack?
Two
minutes. Okay, I'm going to talk about my daughter, Erica, who is Chef Erica. She has her own show, and her show is on cooking, and we visited her for Father's Day. She has a little summer house up in up near Peekskill, and she has problems gardening up there. First of all, it's very rocky soil. Secondly, she's on the edge of a forest. There's an undeveloped state park adjacent to her property that only has trails, so she frequently has deer visiting her, and groundhogs, and woodchucks, and all those nice little critters who love to eat vegetables. So if you look on the website, on the photo gallery, you'll see a picture of Erica, part of her garden. So she did one part of her greens garden in an old bathtub, because if you plant it in a bathtub, they can't burrow in from underneath, because the bathtubs, as you know, are made of steel or cast iron. And on top of the bathtub, she has mesh to keep the deer from eating it. So it's a struggle to keep critters from eating her garden. So around her house, she has two of these small gardens to keep the critters out. And when we went up to visit her on last Sunday for Father's Day, she served us a great salad made from greens from her garden, right? Mm-hmm. They were red greens and green greens and
cilantro
that she's growing in her garden. So that was really nice. So you too can do it if you have a small space. And now the community that Erica lives in has just started a community garden where each member who wants it can get a plot to grow their stuff in. It looked like it was about 10 feet long and 5 feet wide. And they're just setting that up. So if you live in a place where you'd like to try gardening, well, first of all, there's a roof. And that's becoming really popular, roof gardens like we have here at Roberta's. Window box gardens or any kind of planters, you can plant stuff. And then remember, there's always hydroponics. If you don't have a lot of room, you can plant a hydroponic garden. And there's a little company out here in Bushwick called, let's see, they use the old name of Bushwick for the name of their company, which I can't think of right now. But if you go and put in hydroponic gardening on the web, you know, the Magic Web has everything on it. So you'll be able to find it. Okay, and let's see. I don't remember. Oh, it's something like Boswick. Is that it? You know those guys, Boswick Farm? Is that how you say it?
I believe so, yeah. I think they're on Flushing, right?
Right, and Flushing. They came out on a show once when we did a show on plants and hydroponics. So they would be a good resource, and they'll help you set up even in your apartment, if you only have a sunny window, or if you don't have any sun at all, you could use artificial light if you really want to grow some vegetables in your apartment. So remember to look at the photos that we're going to put up with the show, and if you have any questions or stuff about gardening you'd like to know, well, send us a question or send us a comment, and we'll try to help you out. So here comes the music, Country Gardens. I think Percy Grainger was an Australian or an English guy, and he wrote this piece many years ago, but it's a beautiful little piece of music. So, Janet, we're going to sign off now. So say goodbye to everybody.
Bye-bye from Roberta's in Brooklyn.
Right. That was Janet David, my partner, and we'll be back next week with another show on gardening, and this one is going to feature a friend of mine who was a super gardener. His name was Sim Ross, and we're going to talk about his many gardens. So signing off.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This week, all over the internet and also in all of the meat trade papers, as well as in this particular article on digital trends, a story has been running about the poop burger. Japanese scientists have found a way to create artificial meat from sewage containing human waste. Mitsuyuki Ikeda, a researcher from the Okayama Laboratory, has developed steaks based on proteins from human excrement. Tokyo Sewage approached the scientist because of an overabundance of sewage mud. They asked him to explore the possible uses of the sewage, and Ikeda found that the mud contained a great deal of protein because of all the bacteria. The researchers then extracted those proteins, combined them with a reaction enhancer, and put it in an exploder, which created the artificial steak. The meat is 63% proteins, 25% carbohydrates, 3% lipids, and 9% minerals. The researchers color the quote-unquote meat red with food coloring and enhance the flavor with soy proteins. Initial tests have suggested people say that it even tastes like beef. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it, though. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you. But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it.
You know? I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts were
gone. You like what you hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on heritageradionetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives. The following is a message from Zingerman's. From June 30th to July 3rd, 2011, come hang out at Camp Bacon, a four-day festival hosted by Zingerman's. The main event is an all-day affair at Zingerman's Roadhouse featuring plenty of bacon, bacon learning, and such luminaries as Alan Benton, John T. Edge, Molly Stevens, and more. The event will be taking place in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Proceeds from this event benefit Southern Foodways Alliance. Also, on Friday, July 1st, there'll be a special benefit performance featuring Andre Williams and the Gold Stars and special guest John Langford and Skull Orchard. Visit www.zingermanscampbacon.com for more information and for tickets. Once again, that's www.zingermanscampbacon.com.